The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and, the Super Bowl is over, and here where I'm broadcasting from in New York City, it is cold, frosty, icy conditions. Hunger winter has set in, and it's time to get serious. Time to get serious about health, because we've had one long extended potlatch from Thanksgiving through the Christmas holidays and New Year's. Officially ending at Super Bowl time, now it's time to get serious and to detox, get our health in order as we gear up for spring. And I can't think of a better guest to help guide us through that process than today's guest. He's Dr. Frank Lipman, and he has a new book out that is fantastic. It's very inspiring. It's The New Health Rules, Simple Changes to Achieve Whole Body Wellness. Dr. Lipman is one of my good colleagues here in New York City. He runs a very, very popular practice entitled the 1111 Wellness Center, which he founded in 1992, and he's a pioneer and global leader in the field of health and functional medicine. He has been featured all over the place in many popular magazines, Vogue, Men's Journal, the Oprah Magazine, and many other national magazines. This book, The New Health Rules, is his third book. So welcome, Frank. It's a pleasure having you as a guest here on Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you for having me, Ron.
Okay, so the book is entitled The New Health Rules. And so what is implicit in this title is these are not just health rules. These are new health rules, as if in contradistinction to some old health rules. So, and I think that as I go through the book, that seems to be the theme of the book, is that maybe we're overturning some old assumptions and bringing new findings to the attention of the public.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of it's actually old rules in a way that for some reason in our culture and Western medicine got turned around. And a lot of this is just simple ancient wisdom that is now starting to be acknowledged as new again. I just felt there were so many myths out there about health. Fat is bad, or, you know, eat the egg whites, you know, things like that, that, you know, we decided to call it the new health rules. I know it's a bit of an obnoxious name on some level.
Right.
But
people hate rules, but, you know, I think...
And I'm one of them. But actually, the publishers came up with that title. But the idea is to just bust some myths and make people, you know, look at something that's visually appealing, that they'll make simple changes to feel better.
Well, it is it's a handy little book, and beautiful imagery in the book, beautiful photography, very inspiring. I think it's a great gift. You know, if you have someone in your life who you want to get on a healthy program, this is a great little book to give them. Because, you know, these days we have e-books and everything, you know, information online. You can sit at a computer and get information. But this is like an old-fashioned book that is, you know, you hold it, it's light, it's concise and aesthetic. And it's a good thing to put on your coffee table to inspire you to do better things. So let's start attacking some of these myths in terms of things you've talked about. So one of the things that's up front and center in your book is the statement, fat is good for you. And that might be an astonishing statement to some people. So explain, and also perhaps you've gone through a personal evolution going, as I have, from, you know, sort of a vegetarian, vegan type lifestyle towards a realization that maybe the facts don't support that entirely.
Right. Not only the facts for me personally. I mean, I was eating a sort of, you know, pescatarian, vegetarian type of diet, lots of whole grains, lots of fruit. I grew up in South Africa eating tons of fruit. And over the years, in the last couple of years, I noticed that my hemoglobin A1C started going up. And, you know, measuring it over the year or two, it just started going up and up, and it just didn't make sense because I thought I was eating a healthy diet, the healthy diet that I basically endorsed and encouraged my patients to eat, which is sort of what most of us
which is also in line with the conventional recommendations. You know, the My Plate and the Food Pyramid advocate many, many servings of fruits and vegetables, some of which are starchy and, you know, maybe contributed to that.
Exactly, and that's exactly what contributed. And I noticed that not only with myself, but with my patients. And as I, you know, started changing my diet, eating more fat and more meat again, actually grass-fed meat and lots of eggs, including the egg yolks, everything started leveling out, and I lost weight and I felt much better, and I actually couldn't believe it. So I started questioning what I was actually recommending to patients more, and, you know, I started questioning that a couple of years ago, and so that's where it comes from. And I see this with my patients all the time, especially with patients as they get older. I think what I see is as people get older, we tend to become more insulin resistant or less tolerant of so many carbs in our diet. And I'm not saying this is for everyone. For some people, they eat a vegan diet and they're perfectly healthy. But I do see this pattern commonly when people eat too many carbs that their body can tolerate, and even good, you know, even too much brown rice and other whole grains. I see the hemoglobin's A1C going up, and I see them putting on weight. So it's becoming more of an issue, and it's definitely more common in older people. I mean, I don't know if that's what you see clinically, but that's definitely what I see clinically.
Well, absolutely. You know, I think many of us in the field of integrative medicine who are concerned with nutrition, there's been sort of a sea change in our realization about the role of protein and fat in our diet. And it's, you know, we no longer demonize these foods as much as we used to.
Right.
So you actually, apropos of fruit, you actually have a page dedicated to the proposition that, fruit's good, but, you know, don't go over the top on fruit consumption.
Well, that's also, I think what's in the thing about fat, you know, about when you're recommending good fat, and I'm recommending good, you know, I basically say, I don't think I said this in the book, but if it's made by God, it's probably fine. If it's made by man, chances are it's not fine. So fats that come from nature are usually healthy, and man-made fats are not. What I do find is if you're going to eat a lot of fat, it's really important to eat very low on the, eat a really low sugar diet. And a lot of people, and myself included, tend to eat a lot of fruit, especially when you're starting to come off sugar and you want the sweetness, you tend to eat more and more fruit. And I think that tip was there for people like me and for many people I see, that maybe even too much fruit for your metabolism is not such a great thing. And so that's why I sort of had a little bit of a warning of, you know, just be careful of too much fruit or eat low on, you know, low glycemic fruits.
Right.
You know, I love, you know, my mangoes and pineapple and all those high sugar fruits. I love them.
You're a tropical guy. You were raised in that kind of environment.
Exactly. Yep.
And
so that's where that comes in, yeah.
And when it comes to grains, you know, there's, of course, we're all influenced by the book The Grain Brain by Dr. David Perlmutter.
Right.
And you call for total rejection of that, but just, you know, watch your grain consumption.
Yeah, I mean, if I see someone with autoimmune disease or having a problem, then I take them off all grains. But, you know, I think that may be a bit hard for a lot of people. So, you know, just a sort of a warning, or just be careful of, because not whole grains are not necessarily healthy. I mean, personally, I hardly eat grains at all anymore, and I used to eat tons of them, and I feel so much better. And I, once again, I see that a lot with patients too. But I'm not saying everyone can't tolerate whole grains. I just think thinking that eating tons of whole grains is healthy for you is a bit of a myth.
Right. I mean, that again was one of the popular nutrition trends, I guess, in the 1990s, you know, when we were getting started, is, you know, just you couldn't OD on whole grains. And, of course, the food industry capitalized on that because then they gave you the, you know, whole grain Cheerios. They gave you whole grain Cocoa Puffs, whole grain Trix, and, you know, you name it. And just to throw a little whole grain on the label, and you could consume it ad nauseum.
Right. So, Ron, you're telling the folks how old we are. We've been doing this a lot. I mean, it is interesting because when we, you know, when we were doing this in the 90s, it was all about whole grains. And so, you know, a lot of the new health rules are actually new for me, too, in many ways. I mean, maybe not as new, but, yeah, I mean, my thinking about nutrition, and I'm sure yours, too, has changed quite a bit over the last 20-odd years.
Indeed. And then, you know, we've stigmatized eggs, and actually one of your specific health rules is eat the yolks. And I guess you probably still encounter patients who are like, they, you know, kind of timidly say, well, you know, I do have some eggs, but I make sure that I get rid of the yolks. I have just egg white omelets. And then you kind of roll your eyes, and you have to explain it to them. So what do you have to say to them?
Exactly. Well, it drives me crazy when I hear that, you know, I only have my egg white omelet. Well, I think it's, you know, the yolk is, first of all, you know, a lot of people don't eat the yolk because they think that it's going to raise their cholesterol. I mean, the question of how significant a high cholesterol and a low cholesterol is a whole other topic. But you don't actually raise your cholesterol from eating cholesterol. You don't get bad cholesterol from eating cholesterol. It's actually from the sugar and the grains, probably. So the myth that eating a lot of eggs is going to cause a high cholesterol is, once again, a myth. So, and I think that's the main reason why people don't eat the yolk. And the yolk is where so many good nutrients are. And I just think the concept of separating foods out, or, you know, I think most foods are perfect the way they are. The idea of taking any part of any food out has always been a problem for me. It's also coming from the Chinese medicine tradition that always didn't make sense anyway. So I feel very strongly about egg yolks, and don't take out, eat the whole egg, eat the whole food, period.
Indeed. And you actually, in your book, you take a fairly strong stand about statins. I don't think you say categorically that no person should ever take a statin, and I agree with that position, but you say, quote, step away from the statins. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think, you know, as you point out, there is a place for statins. I'm not saying no one should ever, there's not a role for statins, and there's no indications for them. I just think they are overused, and, you know, they're handed out almost, you know, they're like candy, and as preventive medicine, you know, there's no research showing that there's a benefit to taking statins if you don't have a history of heart disease. And so many cardiologists as well, not only doctors, are actually recommending statins as cancer prevention, heart disease prevention. It's crazy. I mean, these aren't benign drugs. I've seen so many patients over the years who've had serious side effects from statins, and there was no indication to actually give these people statins in the first place. So I do feel there's a place for statins. I just think they, you know, grossly overprescribed, and I think people need to be wary of just accepting that doctor's prescription of take a statin because it's, you know, it's just everyone's taking one. It's good for you.
Here's what I like. Everything you know about breakfast is wrong. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think most people have cereal or some high-carb, sugar-laden breakfast. You know, most people have cereal, or if it's not cereal, they'll have fruit and yogurt, and they think that's good for breakfast. And, you know, so I'm trying to encourage people to have more fat and protein in the morning and less carbs. You know, I see it so often, people have their cereal, even if it's their whole grain cereal and granola or muesli, whatever they think is healthy. And, you know, they get their sugar rush. Even if it's whole grains, they're still there. Blood sugar is going to go up, and then it's going to come down, and they're going to start chasing sugar all day. So I really encourage people to have fat and protein for breakfast rather than a high-carb breakfast, which is what we've sort of been taught to have as a healthy breakfast.
Do you mean like Jones sausages, or, you know, is that the kind of fat you envision for people to have for breakfast?
Well, you know, I don't. If it's a healthy, if it's grass fed, I don't have a problem with the health. If it's a healthy source of fat, that's fine, you know. But usually, I'm encouraging. You know, I'm a big fan of just avocados or, you know, eggs. Having a shake and putting some coconut oil on butter, things like that.
Yeah,
that's what I tend to recommend. You know, I'm a big shake proponent, and just putting tons of, you know, avocado, coconut oil, almond butter, just fill it up with good fats, chia seeds. But, you know, if people are having bacon and eggs for breakfast and it's a good source of bacon, I have no problem with that either. I think much healthier than cereal.
Right, and we have to recognize that that cereal thing is sort of a historical deviation from traditional breakfast. So, sort of the Industrial Revolution,
exactly.
And you know, the guys named Post and Kellogg decided to cash in on grains and, you know, factory grown agricultural products, and put it in a box and put a label on it and claim that it's healthier than what our traditional American or European breakfast used to be.
Right. When I grew up in South Africa in the 50s and 60s, we used to have kipper and eggs.
Kipper and eggs, yes.
Yeah. That was our breakfast.
That's herring. That's like herring.
Yeah, basically like a herring. Yeah, that's basically a standard breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
It's kipper and eggs. So, yeah, we only got that revolution later on in South Africa. So
that was during the Boer War. The Boer Wars, wasn't it?
I'm kidding.
I'm just trying to date you a little bit. I know that you've been around for a while, but probably not that long. But but here, you know, the great revolution in breakfast eating occurred, you know, with commercialization of whole grain cereals, which came in a box and which were preserved. And, you know, instead of going to the barn and getting the eggs and, you know, getting in the cheese from the cows and going to the smokehouse and getting us, you know, some lard or bacon, we switched to packaged foods, and to our detriment to some extent. And then we were sold a bill of goods that this was healthier.
Exactly.
So you're a big – go ahead.
You know, so that, I mean, that's what the book is all about. You know, as I said, getting back to what we used to do before we got conned into all these unhealthy habits. Sorry.
No, go ahead. So you're a big juice maven, and actually a couple of books that you've written before this book. One is called The Best Green Eats Ever. The other one is by the way, all your books are beautiful, beautifully formatted.
That's
aesthetic.
Actually one of my health coaches' book.
Okay,
that's Katrina. She's one of my health coaches.
Oh, okay.
He wrote two books, Best Green Eats and Best Green Juices. So, yeah, I'm a huge fan of green juices. The problem we're seeing today with green juices is a lot of them have too much sugar because you know, the juicing places put too much fruit in, which ends up not being good for you. So I'm a huge fan of green juices. I think it's a great way of getting nutrients into you. I think people need to be very, very wary of the amount of sugar that often comes with these so-called healthy green juices. So I'm very wary of what's happening in the juice world, because I think we're creating more of a problem than helping people.
Right. There's some people who, you know, they're sugar addicts, and they convert from candy bars and cola drinks to, you know, drinking, quote, healthy juices, but they're laced with beet juice and carrot juice and lots of apple juice and, you know, other fruit juices. In effect, they're, you know, little hummingbirds sucking on a sugar bottle all day long.
Well, this is what happened to me. I've always been a sugar addict, and many, many years ago, I got into juicing. So I got a juicer here at the office, and I started juicing apples, carrot, and beet juice because I thought it was healthy.
Yeah.
And I put on all this weight. I couldn't work out what was going on.
Right. That's very interesting. You talk about healthy smoothies, and I like the idea of in putting healthy fats into your smoothie, because a lot of people, they'll put some protein powder in there, they'll put some kind of fruit juice in there, and, you know, turn it up, and that's the, you know, that's the sum total of their smoothie experience. You can make smoothies with healthy fats, and so some of the ways, let's review. You put a little bit of, like, a tablespoon of coconut oil, which is at a room temperature, it's kind of solid this time of year if you have a cool apartment. You can slice a half an avocado in there. Now, a lot of people think, well, yuck, an avocado in a smoothie. No, it's great.
Avocados in And shakes are the best, right?
They're fabulous. They're
thick and creamy.
Yes.
So, yeah, I always use avocado in my shakes.
And then you mentioned chia seeds, or sometimes flax seeds can go in there and, you know, turn the blender up and they kind of dissolve into the drink. And, you know, maybe even for some people, maybe a teaspoon of omega-3 flax oil or something like that that could also go in the shake. And that provides sort of a it's balanced because it's got some carbs, it's got some protein, and it's got a little bit of fat. So it's a little time-released carb that doesn't hit you all of a sudden and send your blood sugar through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, I have a shake every morning. I'm addicted to it. First of all, it's like having ice cream in the morning. I make them thick.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just an easy, healthy way to start the day. So I'm a huge smoothie proponent.
Right, and then you can sort of smuggle all kinds of healthy ingredients in there, some fresh berries that are always really good for your brain and your cardiovascular system. And you know, it's sort of a way to make sure that you meet some of your nutritional requirements in a quick and palatable way. So, good idea.
Yep. I think it's a much healthier than juicing, unless you're smart about juicing. I mean, it's a little bit different to juicing, but, you know, I think I wish there was more of a healthy smoothie craze. I'm just very concerned about this juicing craze. I'm just seeing, you know, when I look at a lot of these juice places, the amount of sugar, it's like sometimes it's more than a Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So it's, you're obviously, you know, I think we in the health field, we have to look at these trends and embrace them, but also sometimes step back and take a little bit of a critical look in terms of advising our patients not to uncritically embrace fad kinds of programs. And you talk a little bit about this when in your book you say a green juice is not a detox. In other words, it is detoxifying, but in and of itself, that's not going to make your body less toxic, or is it?
Right. Well, you know, I feel, you know, the whole detox craze is, you know, another fad, but, you know, I feel strongly, you know, detox is a way to support your body's own detoxification system. So that's, to me, what a detox is, using nutrients that support liver function, and probably most important, taking antimicrobials or herbal antibiotics to kill the bad guys in the gut, because I think, you know, the more I do this, the more I think probably the commonest problem I see is an imbalanced microbiome, an imbalance in the good and the bad bacteria in the gut, which then leads to all sorts of problems, including toxicity. So when I talk about detox, it's about ridding, you know, not only removing the toxins that you're putting into your body, but trying to decrease or get rid of the toxins that have been formed in your body, and a lot of them come from the gut. So to me, a detox needs to include ways of treating what's going on in the body and supporting the body's own detoxification systems, which is mainly the liver and the gut.
And so you mentioned antibiotics. You know, surely you don't mean prescription antibiotics. You mean like natural antimicrobials
Exactly. Natural, absolutely. Sorry, herbal antibiotics.
And what are some of them? Give us some examples of natural antimicrobials.
You know, like berberine, black walnut, barberine. You know, there's so many formulas out there which are mixed formulas that actually seem to work really well. Olive leaf extract, grapefruit seed extract. You know, I use a number of these herbal formulas, and they work really well, and most people seem to feel better after the course of these herbal antibiotics. And I think, and I have a cleanse which I include those in, and I think that's probably why the cleanse is so successful. I mean, yes, because you're decreasing the sugar and the gluten and the dairy and possibly other pro-inflammatory foods, but I think when you decrease the amount of toxicity emanating from the gut, it makes a huge difference. So I'm a huge fan of these antimicrobial herbs that kill, whether it's bacteria or yeast or parasites. I'm not even sure, you know, a lot of this is guesswork because it's so hard to measure this.
It's in its infancy, this whole concept of the microbiome and how to rebalance it.
But it works. I mean, you know, sometimes you hit the jackpot, sometimes you don't. You've got to play around with different herbs, with different probiotics. There's no one right probiotic for everyone. But I do feel that is often the source of people's problems. And when you get it right, I mean, I've seen miraculous recoveries from all sorts of things when you actually get the balance of the microbiome correct.
Well, great. This is a good point at which to pause because, as many of our listeners know, we divide our podcast into two parts. So let's stipulate this is part one. And in part two of our discussion with Dr. Frank Lipman, who's author of a great new book, The New Health Rules, Simple Changes to Achieve Whole Body Wellness, we'll talk a little bit about lifestyle changes that people should contemplate to achieve wellness. It's not all about the vitamins you take and the foods you eat. There are many aspects to achieving optimal health. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Please join us for part two of our discussion with today's guest, Dr. Frank Lipman. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.